Today and every day, the American people must make decisions on which their whole survival may depend. To make sound decisions, the people must be informed. For this, they depend on the nation's free press. How well is the nation's press doing its essential job? The people have a right to know the truth. They have a responsibility to ask. The right to question. The press and the people. As moderator from Harvard University, the winner of the Peabody Award for Television and Radio Journalism, and the Lauterbach Award for Outstanding Contribution in the Field of Civil Liberties, Mr. Louis Lyons.
Our guests are two of the most perceptive commentators on radio and television.
One guest is a veteran of 20 years with CBS, a war correspondent on three continents, winner of a dozen awards, and chief of CBS Washington Bureau, Mr. Eric Severide.
Mr. Severide says, and I quote, "The bigger our information media, the less courage and freedom of expression they allow. Bigness means weakness."
Our other guest was also a distinguished war correspondent, recipient of many journalism awards, a Washington correspondent for 16 years, now with NBC, Mr. Martin Agronsky.
Mr. Agronsky says, quote, "The special story, the report in depth, becomes more and more difficult to keep on the air because of the tremendous rising costs of TV production."
Our guests, then, are a very special breed of radio and television journalists. They're the broadcasting counterpart of our nationally syndicated columnists, our Lippmans, our Alsops, our Childs. They don't just read news headlines in front of a camera. They do their own reporting. They form their own news judgments. The role, then, of an Agronsky or a Severide is to get to the core of the big news and give us their digest of its meaning. Well, Mr. Agronsky, we've heard you quoted as saying that the special news report that is going into news in depth is disappearing from television because of the very high cost. Won't you explain?
Mr. Lyons, it really doesn't need an elaborate explanation. That means exactly what I said. It costs so much for anyone to take an hour, let us say, of television time on a network basis, that only the greatest corporations can afford it. And the greatest corporations, faced with that kind of a cost, are inclined to compare the cost that they put out for a news program to the cost that they would put out for a for an entertainment program, for a shoot 'em up western, and finding that the ratings, and in their opinion, the audience, is infinitely smaller for the news program, they don't care to spend their money that way. Therefore, considering that a major network costs so much for any large corporation to sponsor a news special, the inclination is more and more not to do it and to spend that kind of money for what they regard as something that would get them a larger audience. And fundamentally, that's what I meant by that observation.
Thank you. Let's get back to that. And first, Mr. Severide, you say that the larger a news medium, the less chance there is in it for courage and freedom of expression. Won't you discuss that a minute?
Yes, Mr. Lyon, I think it's axiomatic. I think that courage of controversy, courage of innovation in the realm of ideas goes in inverse ratio to size of the establishment. And that's very simple. I think it's because, first, that the investment in any given item that's produced, whether it's a program or Hollywood, a movie, or with a big mass magazine, any individual issue is such an enormous investment that in a sense they must find a great denominator in terms of audience, whether it's the lowest common denominator or not. The risk is too great. This is not true of the small capitalized media like the stage or book publishing or small magazines.
That is, the bigger the stake, the less you can afford to hazard a loss of a customer.
On the whole, though, of course, I must say for bigness that you can do things in terms of extensiveness. The scope of it is enormous. Small corporations could not possibly do some of the tremendous shows around the world that the great networks can do. It's not all loss. I don't mean that.
Well, Mr. Grunsky, what Mr. Severide has just said makes me wonder whether cost is the only reason that the networks with their sponsors don't go into some of these special programs. To what extent is it because of this concern about controversy that sponsors prefer Westerns to information?
Well, I think to a considerable extent, I accept Mr. Severide's observations completely in that area. I think both of us have had any number of experiences personally which tend to substantiate what he has said. I can cite one to you if you like. I was doing a program last year, an interview program, a half-hour interview program on NBC, and I did an interview with the Reverend Martin Luther King down in Montgomery, Alabama. And as a demonstration of the kind of pressures that networks face, and that it's rather difficult for them to withstand, when I did the show in Montgomery, Alabama, local segregationists permitted it to go to the network, but disconnected the cable that led to the local transmission, so it was cut off in Montgomery. If you get into a segregation story, for example, the network must reckon not only with sponsors, and there I would expand Mr. Severide's observation, he must also reckon with regional susceptibilities. He must reckon with the sensitivity of local stations on the network who are unwilling to participate in controversial issues that directly affect their area, their district.
Martin, I was going to take a slight issue with you on the first thing you said about the special news programs going declining. I'm not quite sure they are. There is one thing, this is just intramural trade talk in a sense, Mr. Lyon, but the thing that is so costly is film. CBS has eliminated a number of special news programs because they were based on film. When you get into that realm, the laboratory costs and so on, it's perfectly fantastic.
Yes.
But I don't think this has to always mean, and I'm sure that's one of the basic reasons why See It Now went off as a regular, a weekly or monthly program. But CBS has now started a Sunday program after canceling the one I used to do last year and for 3 years that required chiefly film, which is very expensive. Now we have another show, also a half hour, that Howard Smith is doing called Behind the News. It doesn't use anything but stock film or some stills and interviews. It's far cheaper to do, but I'm not sure that it isn't quite as good in a sense in terms of bringing out into understanding. It might even be better. I don't think there is a rule that operates here except the rule of the cost of film.
Well, put it this way, Eric. Let us say that a large corporation that had been sponsoring an hour news special at a prohibitive cost, or what we might regard as prohibitive cost, had the opportunity to spend twice as much money for an entertainment program with a Bob Hope or what have you on it. I'm inclined to think that the corporation and their advertising agency would not hesitate for a moment to spend twice the amount of money. It is not that they are priced out by the initial cost of the program. They are priced out by what they regard as the value received. In other words,
that's
the audience
right.
and ratings
the
they can get.
The total cost of network broadcasting for a sponsor, this universal cross-country thing, is so fantastic. The necessity to get the greatest mass audience, that most of the industries that can afford this, they're not great in number, and they're chiefly general consumer item things.
And they are guided entirely. They are guided entirely by the return on the investment.
Well, they're businessmen.
We're told, and one of you, I think, suggested it, that they feel the public is more interested in the entertainment, the whodunit, or the Western, than in good news reporting. Well, now, Mr. Severide, do you feel they underestimate the public's interest in information?
I always have thought so. I've thought so. The reading of newspapers, magazines, encompasses millions and millions of people in this country. But there is an extra dimension and an extra difficulty when you come to television. This is partly show business. It is partly entertainment. So are newspapers, but not quite to the same extent. People normally do not sit down in front of that television set in the same frame of mind in which they pick up a newspaper or a magazine. Mm-hmm. That is why television commercials irritate, and newspaper commercials or advertising do not.
Well, now what about radio? To what extent I think of radio as costing less and having consequently more time, as it certainly used to, for discussion. What has happened, or has this more dramatic television squeezed it out? How's the news doing in radio?
It's not doing well.
Mr. Lyon, well, Eric on NBC, Eric is CBS and I'm NBC, on NBC, news is doing exceptionally well on radio.
Oh, in terms of finances?
Well, in terms of getting sponsors and in terms of a very, very considerable coverage that I'm inclined to feel, and this is not just a house plug, that NBC has every right to be proud of. They do have the News on the Hour programs, which mean 5 minutes of news at every hour on the hour.
Is that news, Martin, really?
No, it isn't. Now, I would agree with you on that. You haven't the time.
The industry that 5 minutes of news is not news.
All right. You haven't the time, I'll grant you. Nevertheless, you can, in... with the time that you're left on a five-minute program, which I shudder to say is 2 minutes and 15 seconds, you can take an angle and say something not the way you would like to, not the freedom you have in 5 minutes, and certainly not the freedom you have in 15 minutes. But beyond that, NBC also does a great spread of feature stuff. For example, we started a thing called Image of Russia. Now, I suggested I'd do something with Justice Douglas on... comparison of Russian and American judicial systems, and I did a half-hour interview with Justice Douglas, and they're running the whole thing intact, a good solid half hour. Now you can cover a subject,
yeah.
And they're giving us the time to do it. And generally they're finding that news is paid on NBC, and they're widening its scope all the time.
It's almost the only thing
on
that
radio.
Pays on radio at all, except,
that's right.
Except recorded music.
That's radio, not TV.
Well, television in Washington. Mr. Gransky, you cover Washington, a
yes.
Great complex of news of great importance to us in the national government. How much total airtime on all the three networks do we get in a day on the news from Washington?
On television?
Shocking yes. Little. Shocking.
You get very little. I don't think that the normal daily 15-minute network television news programs are successful in terms of content, giving people understanding. I don't think they ever can be. You'd be better off on 15 minutes of radio listening to somebody really giving it to you.
I think
well,
the only complaint we have about the television news and information is whether we get enough of it, you see.
Well, you don't. Let's be specific about it. The CBS carries a 15-minute show, and NBC carries a 15-minute show, and ABC carries a 15-minute show. Now, in that 15-minute show, you say Washington coverage. Actually, what does Washington get? At the outside, Washington gets 2 or 3 minutes here, and the rest of it is everything. Now, I defy anyone to cover Washington in 2 or 3 minutes.
Yes, but you see, television did not carry over from radio the old-time radio commentator, who was palatable because you didn't have to look at him, possibly, but you could listen to his voice. It was reasonably palatable voice for as long as 15 minutes, explaining news. This has not been done on television. The closest you come to it is the documentary approach, where you do a long takeout with film and interviews and some commentary, and those are rather infrequent.
Well, what about the editorial? Now we expect the newspaper not only to give us news, but editorial comment. Is there any reason why we should feel that the radio station should be limited just to the facts? What is the problem of getting editorial into the air?
What is
no
the problem?
Problem at all, except with people who run stations. They can do it if they wish.
Well, certainly they can do it.
Would you say that the public takes a rather different attitude, judges television by a rather different standard than the newspaper, and that perhaps the government does too, that makes it more difficult to
it
get
is.
Into comment?
It is different standard because there's a greater, you reach a tremendous number of people, and I suppose they feel that when you consider the mass audience, that there are certain limitations, certain criteria that they feel forced to apply to TV that do not apply to newspapers.
Well, there's a sense of television, and also radio has a kind of a public trust that belongs to everybody. This is partly because of the way it started with government hold on it, parceling out wavelengths. It's become a national whipping boy. Newspapers are not. And this atmosphere, coupled with the endless monitoring by committee or otherwise of Congress, executive people, this relationship with government, which the press does not have, all this has created an atmosphere where it takes a fairly brave TV station owner to go right out and editorialize as a company, though I think you should.
I'm thinking particularly of CBS interview with Khrushchev. And you remember how much criticism arose? Even the president in the press conference tended to be critical of this, and yet nobody criticized a newspaper correspondent for getting an interview with Khrushchev.
Exactly. Reston went over and interviewed him. Nobody would say beans about it.
So now, is it because of this potential regulation by the government?
No, they give a greater weight to the influence, and they feel that they're so tremendous an audience that there should be limitations and restrictions applied to the TV medium that are not applied to newspapers, and I think wrongly.
Legitimate as long as it's not too big.
Yeah.
Let me take up another aspect of that. We've all heard of equal time. We know under some conditions somebody is entitled to time to reply. Well, to what extent is the correspondent, the commentator, in any way held back if he's inclined to a critical comment by feeling this may involve his station in having to give somebody 15 minutes tomorrow night? Does that get in the way?
Well, not really, because it would be rather ludicrous, and I think even a politician with a rather poor sense of perspective and a poor sense of humor would feel he was demeaning himself if he were to say, well, now Severide or Gronsky criticized me for 5 minutes, I want 5 minutes equal time. No, not in that sense. It wouldn't operate that way.
Well, Mr. Gronsky, you've handled some tough assignments, including assignment to Senator McCarthy when he was active.
Yes.
What would be, as you think of it, your toughest one you've handled?
I would say McCarthy. And McCarthy proved very expensive to me on radio. Very expensive indeed. When I worked for ABC, I had a co-op program, which meant individual sponsors in different cities. And Mr. McCarthy was not above bringing pressure to bear on individual sponsors wherever the opportunity presented itself. And I was able, in specific cases, I won't name stations or cities, to determine that in such and such a station, a sponsor brought me because of influence brought to bear by McCarthy.
In fact,
McCarthy,
Mr. Lyon, I think Martin once lost about 24 stations from one broadcast, isn't that correct?
Yes, I did, but that was not McCarthy, that was MacArthur.
Oh.
I did a broadcast on the return of General MacArthur when he addressed the Joint Congress. And I made an observation I don't intend to repeat about the general that was not, in my opinion, in bad taste, nor in my opinion was it inaccurate. But it demonstrated that I didn't believe in, I suppose, the elevated stature that had been given to General MacArthur. And their most incredible response, I'd lost about, I think it was 21 or 22 stations as a result. That not station sponsors.
I didn't have that kind of trouble, Martin, but I did have a senator in the Midwest over the same kind of broadcast about the same general take a punch at me.
we know that a reporter needs only his pad and a pencil, and indeed he doesn't always need that, to get into all sorts of places, meetings, groups, discussions. Are there places where the television reporter is barred that the reporter can get into? Does that limit the range of news that television can cover?
Well, physically and mechanically, it's infinitely more difficult to cover the news. One of the problems in TV, I think you'd agree, Eric, is in a sense you almost have to anticipate where the news is going to break.
You're talking about bringing cameras in.
Yeah.
Well, for instance, you can't, I believe, do any television in the Congress. You can in some hearings and not in others, am I right?
That's quite
I'm
right.
To what extent the television reporting is limited by this feeling about the camera?
Well, it's limited on the House side of the Capitol because of Speaker Rayburn. He doesn't like the clutter and the fuss of cameras, so we've reduced that a great deal. On the Senate side, it's up to the individual committee.
It's entirely up to Rayburn. I had a rather interesting experience with him just last week, as a matter of fact. And Mr. Sam has always been very kind to me in terms of permitting me to do interviews with him. And we did a congressional show last Sunday. He gave me an interview, And I wanted to do it down, and I wanted him to sit on the rostrum. I thought it would be rather dramatic in the empty house chamber. And he wouldn't permit that, nor would he permit us to do it in the house cloakroom or in the reading room or any place like that. He insisted on doing it in his office. And he said flatly that were he to do it, all the precedents that he'd set up in this area would be broken.
Well, Mr. Severine, what would you think of as the most important stories that have not been well or sufficiently dealt with in television, current stories?
Well, some of them are the same kinds of stories that have not been dealt with sufficiently in the press.
I bet.
The China story is one.
Fair enough.
We had an immense break with some initiative of our own involved, I must say. A few weeks ago, this film that got out of China from a German photographer, and here was the first real pictorial story of the Chinese commune. I thought it was one of the greatest documentaries television's ever done.
Well, this is a restriction applied by our government, however, to all news media.
One of your Washington colleagues, Ed Leahy, of the Night Papers, said on our program just a little while ago that inflation was the hardest story to write and the worst covered story, and later on another program, the Harvard economist, Dr. Galbraith, said the same thing. What do you say about that?
All economic problems are hard to do with pictures.
It's tremendously difficult to take a thing like that and portray it. I mean, how do you picture a deflated dollar?
After all, Mr. Lyon, one of the differences in news by ear and
that's one of the things I was coming to.
The press, where you can't use statistics very well, either on radio or television. For the ear alone, you can't do that well. The press can.
I'd wanted to ask you what you think of as the chief differences between newspaper and broadcasting. Are they just competitors, or do they to some extent supplement each other because of different limitations?
Oh, I think that we can add a quality to news coverage, a dimension that newspapers simply cannot. I have in mind a rather obvious example, the conventions. There is an immediacy, there is a feeling, there is a sweat. There is a confusion, there is a spirit that emerges from the floor of the convention that you can go right into. I mean, you see the people worrying and fretting and sweating and fighting and being confused and being pushed around, and you get that quality onto the screen that no reporter can possibly capture in writing about it. Or take the McCarthy hearings, for example. Certainly, the best reporter in the world could not produce the quality of Joe's voice. Couldn't do it. No matter how well you write it, you've got to hear it. You've got to see that face. You've got to see the contempt and the scorn and the caustic way with which he dealt with witnesses. You get a feeling from watching him that you can't reproduce on the printed page. Yeah. This is something we can do they cannot do.
There are great limitations, of course, on both. But there's one thing that, one of the great differences, to put it very briefly, radio and TV compared to the press. In broadcast journalism, you have what I would call page one, sort of a front page of a sports section, sort of an op-ed page with a few columnists or their counterparts. You don't have page two, three, four, five, and six, and so on. That is, stories that are important ought to be read or heard, told, but not important enough. Yeah. This is one reason that discourages a radio or TV reporter from pursuing certain exclusive stories. Unless they turn out to be page one quality, he really can't use them much. This is one great limitation. But what Martin is talking about, this extra dimension of feeling, is tremendously important. I recommend to anybody the speech that Archibald MacLeish gave at Minnesota on poetry and journalism.
Oh, yes.
He said, understanding without feeling is not understanding. Facts are nothing by themselves.
You know, I think of the segregation story, for example, Mr. Lyon. You remember that girl I forget what town it was in down south, who a white girl who wanted to go to the school, despite the fact that Negroes were going to go to the school, was finally talked out of it, apparently, by her parents or by the officials. And I always felt, I mean, it was struck me as sort of a perfect example of the thing that I have in mind, that girl appearing on television, the quality that was evident in the way she spoke and in the way she looked was something that could not be captured.
Yes.
By a reporter.
Yes.
Writing about it.
Well, Mr. Sebright, as a foreign correspondent for many years, how would you rate the performance of the newspapers in foreign coverage? Well, take the New York Times with a great foreign service.
How would I rate them among papers?
How would you rate it as compared to what you'd like to do as a television correspondent? I'm thinking in terms of what Mr. Gronsky said about the importance of seeing the faces and the confusion.
I don't know how you can compare these two quite different media. Mr. Lyon, I could not exist in terms of understanding foreign news without papers like the Times. But then you ask yourself, thinking again of MacLeish's distinctions about facts and real understanding, except for this massive reporting of facts, is even the great New York Times, is it really a great medium in that sense? I sometimes wonder. This great divorcement of factual knowledge from human understanding of things, which MacLeish thinks is a danger to our whole civilization.
Yes.
I think you see it even in that paper. There was a time when there were great literary journalists of a kind, the artist at work. You don't see much of that in the press now.
Well, now CBS has a great foreign correspondent corps. NBC has a great foreign correspondent corps. But to what extent do they get through to us? A minute and a half from Paris by Schoenbrunner, 2 minutes somewhere else. Is there any chance we can get more from these men, longer chunks?
I would love to see it. We were better on radio some years ago in that respect, yes.
Certainly there's a better chance if the networks want to do it. That's your answer.
Well, then let me ask each of you, perhaps, for one last question. If you had a chance, say, to take 2 months off, beginning tomorrow, to do some special stories, your own choice, what would you most want to do, you feel most need to do?
Me?
Yes.
What would I most want to do? I've had in the back of my mind, forefront of my mind, for a long, long time, two stories, really. One on prospects for peace. I won't go into the way I'd like to do it, but
prospects for peace.
The prospects for peace through the mouths and the ideas of people all over the world and statesmen. I think that's
well, Mr. Sebright, have you got a
I don't know, really. There are a lot of things that fascinate me that I'd like to see done. I'd love to see television do a whole series on the Beat Generation in this country, in England, a lot of places. What is all this? The philosophy, the music, the rest of it. China, lots of things. There's no end.
Loads of things.
Well, I'm sure there's no end. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Well, the old newspaper cliche that you give people what they want has a special twist in television. Here we see the individual advertiser, the sponsor, decides whether people want news or entertainment, controversy or comics. And this has seriously complicated the problem of getting news information through what is chiefly a medium of entertainment. And as we've seen, our television journalists are concerned about this problem. And clearly, it is our problem too. Well, until next week at this time on The Press and the People, this is Louis Lyons.
The Press and the People. Mr. Lyon's guests were two distinguished television and radio commentators, Martin Agronsky, Washington correspondent for the past 16 years, now with NBC, and Eric Sebright, chief Washington correspondent of CBS. This program was made possible through a grant from the Fund for the Republic. Transcripts of this program are available at no charge by writing to Box 2584, Grand Central Station, New York 17, New York. Next week, The Press and the People will again examine the work of the nation's free press in informing you, the American public. The Press and the People.